right, this is America This Week. I'm Matt Taibbi.
And I'm Walter Kern.
Walter, how's it going?
Good. I've decided not to shave this morning. It was a conscious
decision. That's a wise decision.
Yeah. Well, you see, I expected you to show up with that beard thing, and I wanted to compete, but you've decided to go full Doogie Howser, clean shaven, and I'm here looking
like...
Yeah,
we got to get our cycles lined up.
Yeah. I look like the old man in the sea. It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas, springtime, and I'm in a pretty good mood. Seasons are finally turning, so and the craziness of the election season is upon us, so there will always be plenty to talk
about.
That's
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have lots to talk about. Just a quick announcement before we get to the show. We have a lot of interesting things to look at. But a couple of weeks ago, I announced on Racket that was going to be giving an award to the person who did the best. Yes, the Deep State is actually kind of awesome. Spoof video, and we got it. We have a sizable amount of submissions. I'm going to be making an announcement about a winner, maybe more than one winner on Monday. So tune in. Probably going to rope Walter into some consultation about some of these.
I declare the New York Times the winner in advance. We can only award second prize because they're very solemn and serious. Deep State is awesome videos were pretty unbeatable in my estimation.
That's true. As comedy goes, that was pretty unbeatable. So I guess we'll be awarding second place. It's like Larry Bird's first 3-point contest. You know, I'm just looking to see who's coming in second. what he told the other guys in the locker room. So, look, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the news this week. We could obviously talk about protests that are raging as we speak, not far from me in Columbia University, in Yale, NYU, across the country, but. There was also a very consequential story over the last weekend that has potential ramifications, and there's a really interesting thing that's developed out of it. So Saturday, in kind of a rare Saturday congressional session, there was a series of votes where all sorts of things just suddenly got passed. The long-awaited funding bill for Israel and Ukraine and Taiwan, $95 billion in mostly military aid, which Republicans had been stonewalling for a long time, finally got passed. FISA got passed. The TikTok ban was also thrown in there in one of the bills. But let's just start with what it looked like when they passed the foreign aid bill. Walter, because I think you'll find, I mean, we've all seen this scene, but it kind of sets the scene for everything else. Here's the actual vote.
On this vote, the ayes are 311 and the nays are 112. The bill is passed. Oh, one voting present. I missed it, but thank you. Okay. The House will be in order. The House will be in order. The chair would remind my colleagues to observe proper decorum. Flag waving on the floor is not appropriate. The House will be in order. Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid on the table. For what purpose does the gentleman from Florida rise? I said, well, the gentlewoman from Florida. The gentlewoman is not recognized.
All right. So that was Florida Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna saying, put those damn flags down. this became a big deal, the whole waving of the flags. Kind of interesting because we've been hearing a lot about how the Democrats are the only adults in the room, and they're waving Ukrainian flags on the House floor. And then Mike Johnson, who was in the process or is about to be crowned Winston Churchill for his role in getting all this passed, afterwards he comes out and gives a statement. And here we go.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. The House has worked its will. These are not normal times here in the House or around the world, as we all know. And we had a disturbance here on the House floor just a bit ago. I just want to say simply what I think most people around the country understand and agree. We should only wave one flag on the House floor. And I think we know which flag that is.
Okay, so that's him admonishing the rest of the caucus. And then there was a series of reactions to this, and I kind of want to start with this one, Walter, because this was the most striking. This is Morning Joe, and they have a very interesting take on what happened that weekend.
I guess their reasoning is they want Russia to win so badly that they want to house the speaker over it. I mean, it's a strange position to take. I think they want to be in the minority too. I think that's an obvious reality.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw,
Texas. Russia win so badly. Yeah.
It's a strange position to take.
It's a very bizarre position.
Don't but really
again,
get it.
Again, why do you have people from rural districts parroting Vladimir Putin's talking points? Very strange.
Strange. Anyhow, he's criticizing members of his own party, acting strange, threatening to remove Speaker Mike Johnson over funding for Ukraine. David French and Susan Glasser are still with us. Susan's latest piece for The New Yorker is entitled, "Did Mike Johnson Just Get Religion on Ukraine?"
Well, Susan, it certainly looks that way, does it not?
What happened?
He's quoting Ronald Reagan. He's saying all this sort of things
that
David French and I have been saying for years and have been wondering why he hasn't been saying for 6 months now.
You know, the hour is late. Let's just say that for Ukraine, you know, it's already a disaster on the front lines because of this months long delay by Republicans and by Mike Johnson. So for him to come out the other day, it was almost this like out of body experience. He was talking as if, you know, he was a Republican from the before times. And you can only imagine that Donald Trump was not happy to hear Mike Johnson talking about, he used the phrase axis of evil. He said, "I believe the intelligence."
We've got Republicans from, he's a Republican from the before times. He used the phrase axis of evil. He believed the intelligence. We are going back in time to the Bush era. Everybody's stoked about it. And this is just the beginning of that theme. This would continue throughout the week. This whole idea that we're going back to the more civilized Bush era when we were fighting terrorism and everybody was on board with it. First of all, Walter, what do you think of that whole "he's from the before times" thing?
Well, I've got a few comments here. First of all, I couldn't help but notice the subliminal insertion of the word "rural" in Joe's talk there. It's rural people who support Putin. I'm going to be on a watch for this word forever now, because since that White Rural Rage book, I've noticed a demonization of the country people of America, also known as my neighbors. So I don't know why he stuck that in there, but apparently yoking Putin and ruralness is important now, and he made sure to do that. Second of all,
Walter, If I could interrupt you briefly, he actually did one better on that theme. This will take just a second. Hang on a sec.
Sure.
You do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may.
Oof. That is the that's the right answer. NBC's Ryan Nobles reporting there. And just one quick correction. Marjorie Taylor Greene had said that he betrayed conservative voters. By conservative voters, she means conservative voters in Moscow, conservative voters who support Vladimir Putin, conservative voters who hate freedom in right. Ukraine, who hate freedom across the West, who hate freedom in places that Americans guaranteed freedom since 1945.
Yeah, I thought he said rural there. I guess he didn't, but you get the idea.
Right.
You know, it's conservative. You know, we're right back to terror lovers, you know.
Freedom-hating Americans in rural America, if we're going to join his later comment. Anyway, I noticed also, what was her name, the New Yorker writer?
God.
Glazer or something like that?
Yeah, Susan Glazer.
Yeah. Her headline was, "Did Mike Johnson get religion?" To which I want to ask, what religion would that be? They have made a religion of war, not to be too preachy here, and apparently he's joined it, that they are going to equate that with a kind of American belief system. Our continuous funding of wars is honest of them, at least. And as far as the before times go, they are the Joe type people, the MSNBC people, are not usually given to nostalgia. That's often a conservative trait, or said to be one, but we're now seeing these kind of Democrats, liberals, so on, harken back to a time of normalcy and goodness that, like you say, was probably the Bush times, when funding wars and crying terrorism and doing everything in their power to clamp down on the ability to question it domestically felt like the good old days. So they're back. It's happy days. The Fonz and Richie and, Bush era militarism. That's supposedly normalcy in America. That's baseline, and we're back to it, they say, and cheer. So that's where we stand, in terms of political culture right now. And, as far as Mike Johnson being hailed as Churchill, that might be little premature. Churchill only became Churchill after World War II was won, and this has yet to be won in any meaningful sense. I couldn't help but see that flag waving as a part of a future video reel that might include Mission Accomplished, George Bush on the aircraft carrier.
Right.
They act as though this funding bill was a victory in a war rather than a deepening of our commitment to a war that is very murky in terms of its outcome. In fact, one of the provisions of this bill was to declare within a certain amount of time what exactly our agenda is in Ukraine, what we will consider victory. And I have yet to see that articulated completely.
No, that was one of the original conditions. I mean, when he first became speaker, he had a meeting he had meetings with the White House, he had meetings with the Democratic leadership, and they laid out a series of conditions under which they would support this bill. And one of them was, sort of getting answers. What are the benchmarks? What are we calling victory over there? How long is this going to go on? What's how do we account for the money we've already spent? Plus, they wanted, you know, what they called, I guess, transformative border security legislation, which incidentally, symbolically, also got killed on this same day. You know, we could argue about the border thing. It's not something that I've spent a ton of time on, but it's just interesting that basically Johnson is being hailed for not negotiating on behalf of his constituents. And the Republican Party, you have to remember, this has been a continuing development within the Republican caucus, which is that they don't want this Ukraine war. I mean, the most recent poll that I saw that was significant, you know, had 61% of Republican voters opposed to spending any more money there. The number has been kind of going up since November. So this idea that, you know, he's some sort of Churchillian hero for delivering this vote, I understand why they're excited about it, but you know, from the Republican point of view, it's at best a questionable move. But let's look at this. Here's the piece that, you know, raised some eyebrows immediately. The bypassing aid, the accidental speaker became an unlikely Churchill. Now, this CNN piece.
I think the key word there is unlikely.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I still consider him an unlikely Churchill. First of all, he's too thin, and it probably doesn't drink enough sherry. But also, as I say, he hasn't sheltered in a bunker while his capital was bombed, like Churchill. There's a lot he hasn't done qualify for that appellation. But, you know, if we're going to call everybody Hitler on one side, we may as well call everybody Churchill on the other and just have at it.
Yeah, I mean, Churchill's been we've really reduced foreign policy to a couple of cliches now. You're either Churchill or Neville Chamberlain or Hitler. Right. And that's pretty much it, I think. But this story also contained a piece of video from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, which I think was very interesting.
President Biden has said that he plans to sign the bill today. Shortly after the vote, Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who's been one of Kyiv's strongest advocates in Washington, offered this stark assessment of why many in his party had turned on Ukraine.
I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin.
Where he should have been all along, interviewing Vladimir Putin.
So that's pretty intense. I mean, again, this does harken back to the Iraq days when, you know, if you were on the wrong side of the whole, you know, invading Iraq thing, you could be bounced from television, you could lose your job. And there was a lot of this same kind of jingoistic lunacy in the air. And it's interesting that we're sort of merging themes, you know, the sort of neoconservative Republicans. David Frum's now kind of a Democrat, right? But his axis of evil is now part of this calculation. I mean, are we going back to the Bush years? It feels quite like that. It's the same interventionist concepts and the same rhetorical tactics.
Well, you know, we have Hanoi Tucker, Tucker Carlson broadcasting the enemy's propaganda. I don't know that I've ever seen Tucker Carlson demonize Ukraine. He seems to have called for some kind of understanding with Russia, some great power understanding. But so I'm not sure McConnell was accurate there.
Of course he's not accurate. This, I mean,
Well, you know, sometimes my understatement is hard to interpret. But I think he's off his rocker in more blunt terms. But in any case, so we've gotten an enemies list and we've gotten a heroes list. Tucker, Putin, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Mike Johnson standing against them in his Churchillian way. What we haven't had is any discussion of the battlefield situation in Ukraine, the likely outcome in the short, midterm, and long term, nor do we really know much about the toll the war has taken so far. This was a completely superhero-based set of arguments without any reference to what's happening. You know, what's happening on the ground, strategy. That's our discourse now. But as I said at the beginning of the show, that, you know, 2003 or something, or 2006 is being held out as the baseline for American normalcy is just fascinating. But I think it's, as I said, also honest, because what we're seeing, Matt, and we saw in this bill, was a combination of foreign military aid and the domestic rules, FISA, the so-called TikTok ban, which are designed to contain dissent. And to me, that's an admission that this is all one fight. It's not just a fight against Putin, but it's a fight against those forces at home that might constrain our muscular militarist foreign policy. So they put it all in one package. And at the end of the day, not only are there more missiles abroad, but there is a narrower opportunity at home probably to discuss these things. But the chilling of our national conversation is happening at the same time that we're getting rah-rah about war is absolutely predictable and harkens back to post-Patriot Act America.
Another thing that harkens back to, shockingly, because I saw this a little bit earlier this week, and it's in keeping with this entire theme. What was another thing we saw during the Bush years? We saw the Daily Show making fun of war. So here we go.
Major announcement from the President of the United States.
It's a good day for America. It's a good day for Europe. And it's a good day for world peace.
Oh, a good day for world peace. I've wanted one of those. I wonder what happened. Did the nations of the world finally band together to outlaw war? Did they finally buy everyone in the world a Coke? Is there finally peace between Kendrick and Drake? What is it?
Moments ago at the White House, President Biden signed a long-awaited aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan into law.
In total, about $95 billion will go toward assisting Ukraine and Israel's war efforts and money to counter China's aggression in the Indo-Pacific.
World peace. Okay. Okay. Is peace the one with the tanks? Is that the
They're not very good anymore, Matt. I mean,
Jordan, that's a comedian named Jordan Klepper. I haven't seen a whole lot of him, but does it not remind you a little bit superficially of, you have the doddering president who gets up, says something totally ridiculous and opposite to what he really means, and then there's the, you know, the goofing on you know, with a little bit of an anti-war twist to it. I just haven't seen anything like that in so long.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I hesitate to take it as an indicator of anything, except for the fact that I think the Democrats are trying to hold together a strange coalition right now. On the one hand, they have deep divisions over Israel and Gaza. On the other hand, they're all gung-ho about Ukraine. And I think that a place like Daily Show is supposed to let a little pressure off in this very contradictory situation. I can no longer imagine that they have independence editorially at these places. They always somehow work with the larger power structure. I'm happy to see it, frankly, personally. I think that war is one of those things that should probably be treated as an evil, a necessary evil, perhaps, but not, shouldn't result in, you know, homecoming-like bursts of enthusiasm. And that's what we saw on the floor of the House. I mean, whenever you're delivering major weapons systems and death, even if it's to the enemy, I don't know that the mood around that should be one of celebration. And so maybe it's gone a bit too far for the TV watchers of, you know, America. I'm not sure.
The subtext of this whole thing is not just about Ukraine or Israel. It's really a domestic sort of infighting story where you have a national security establishment that's increasingly under fire, especially from Republicans, but also from kind of the third party heterodox, you know, wing of America that's represented by people like RFK, Cornel West, even, like, you know, there's this thing around that's become a political problem for the national security establishment. The Democratic voters, especially young ones, don't want the Israel aid. The Republicans don't want the Ukraine aid. There's been an uproar over censorship and surveillance and other things like, you know, the leveraging of internet services to clamp down on opinion, you know, things like that. These are all things that the intelligence community wants. It looked like there was going to be a moment where there was going to be some voter defiance, sort of symbolized by the refusal to go along in the House with more voting for the Ukraine war. When they, because I just didn't think they were ever going to get the votes to do that. And they ended up getting it by like a 3-1 margin. And it's a sweeping victory, I think, for the national security establishment. And that, I think, accounts a little bit for the celebratory edge to the passage of all these bills. I mean, from striking down TikTok to passing FISA, which is, you know, people probably, you know, some our listeners know was beefed up, but probably most Americans aren't aware, you know, included an upgrade as significant as the one the last time FISA went before Congress. Well, actually not the last time, but in 2008, the FISA Amendments Act really sort of souped up a law that had been around since 1978. This is going to do the same thing. It's going to bring it up, you know, a big notch. So they got all kinds of stuff that they wanted. They got the wars that they wanted. They got funding even for Taiwan. And you know, where's the opposition? There's you're not hearing the Democratic opposition to Israel on the floor. Even Bernie Sanders was really muted about the whole thing.
It's the uniparty without tears. I can imagine they do feel relieved because they're giving each other cover. You know, each side is giving the other side cover. The Republicans are helping out on Israel, and the Democrats are helping out on Ukraine.